This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
Republicans with a new budget deal late last night. What's in the bill? Find out now on The Patriot Preacher. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to The Patriot Preacher, covering the news from a Christian perspective. Guess I'll just do my own introduction this morning. Glad to be with you on a Monday morning. Good to be able to talk to all of you. Now, do want to bring this up because this just happened last night. We're just finding out about it this morning. Apparently, throughout the weekend, the House Republicans, the Senate Republicans, were working on it's technically not a budget bill, so I want to be technically accurate here. It's actually more of a spending bill, and the reason that it is that way is because technically we haven't had a budget in 9 years, and so what we've been doing is we've been funding the government through what's known as a continuing resolution. Now, there's several reasons why that's problematic. You've heard about the government being threatened to be shut down over and over and over again several times a year. Well, that's because we've been operating for the past 9 years off of what's known as continuing resolutions. And what these continuing resolutions do is they essentially put off having to do a budget until an agreement can be reached on the budget so that the government can still operate, can still function, while at the same time not having a budget, which, by the way, I believe is a criminal derelict of duty when it comes to the House and the Senate, because that is something that is specifically drawn out in the Constitution that's supposed to be done by our House of Representatives and our Senate, is they're supposed to draw up a budget every single year and put it on the president's desk. He's supposed to sign it, and that funds us for a whole year. They decide on that year by year as opposed to doing it every few months the way we've been doing it for the past 9 years. And there's several reasons why that whole thing is problematic. So just out of the gate, before we even get to the actual meat of what's in it, we're already kind of ignoring the Constitution. We're not even talking about content. We're not even talking what the bill includes just by continuing to rely on continuing resolutions. I was hoping that since Donald Trump got elected, at least we could get a budget through, because we have a Republican in the House, we have a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and a Republican in the White House. You would think, especially when we have one party running those two branches of government, the only two that actually are involved in the budget making process, that you could get a budget that maybe not everybody would agree on, but at least we could get enough votes to pass. But so far, they're not even doing that. So that's the setup. That's to help you understand exactly what's going on here and the reason for all of this. Secondarily, let's look at what actually was done by this bill. Because like I said, they worked through the weekend. They were panicking. They were worried that the government was going to shut down, which it's amazing to me, just going to take a little sidetrack here, that in watching all of the coverage of the potential shutdown, that when Republicans are not in power, they're responsible for the government shutting down. And when the Republicans are in power, they're also responsible for the government shutting down. Because when Ted Cruz would filibuster, there was also that Rand Paul filibuster back in the earlier part of the Obama administration. When that happens, it's the Republicans' fault. And then when the Republicans are not the minority party anymore, when they take power, when they are in charge of making a budget and it doesn't get through, it's also their fault. So it really doesn't matter whether the Republicans are in power or not. It's always the Republicans' fault. And if you're watching the mainstream media, that's the message that you got from watching this past weekend, is that no matter what happens, if the government is shut down, regardless of whose idea it was or how it came about, it's always the Republicans' fault. So it's good to note that. Let's look at what this particular spending bill actually did. Now, it is surprising to me, as I'm sure it is surprising to many of you who are ardent and outspoken Trump supporters, that there is no spending whatsoever, not one nickel, for the border wall, which that was what he was pushing for. That was his big campaign promise that he kind of, in a lot of ways, not only kicked off his campaign, but is one of the things that solidified him as the top candidate. Because you remember his announcement speech, the big takeaway from it, which, by the way, ironically, the left-wing media is to blame for this. There was a throwaway line in there. It's only a couple sentences long, about Mexicans and illegal immigrants, and that became the rallying point that helped him secure the nomination. So you could make an argument that in a lot of ways, the left-wing media is the reason Donald Trump is president right now. But regardless, let's not get off on that. That was his big promise. That was what he was counting on everyone voting for him for. That was something that he said over and over and over again at all his rallies. And now, well, we're just not going to fund it. And that is more significant than you might think, because actually the border wall has been duly approved by Congress several times. As far back as the 80s, it was approved again by many Democrats, including Barack Obama, Chuck Schumer, and Hillary Clinton, that voted for the border wall in 2006. So the border wall has been approved by Congress many times. The reason that it has not been built yet is because it has not been funded. And so essentially what is happening here is Donald Trump and the spending. Now, I'm not blaming all this on Trump, because, of course, the House and the Senate have to be on board with it, too. That's how this government works. That's how the spending bill works. But Donald Trump made this big promise. We're going to have a border wall. We're going to get it through. Not a nickel of border spending, which means, or sorry, there actually is border spending. There's not funding for the border wall itself. They have increased border security. I believe it's about $1.5 trillion, if I'm remembering my, or sorry, billion, $1.5 billion, if I'm remembering my numbers right, in new border security spending, which, you know, is a step in the right direction. That's not something that probably would have happened with Barack Obama as president, because they knew it would have been vetoed. But you do have amped up border security, and so that is something to look forward to. But it's interesting to me that specifically the border wall doesn't have any funding in it whatsoever. I guess that they were worried that it wouldn't pass if they did, or whatever. I don't know why it wouldn't when you've got a Republican-controlled House and Senate. But that's essentially what was going on. And then the other thing that's interesting of note, you do have an increase in defense spending, but you also have an increase in spending on some of the things that the Democrats specifically wanted, like wildfire relief and this was the big sticking point for me. Planned Parenthood is left completely untouched. So for all the bravado that Trump had, that all my fellow pro-life advocates optimistically and I think correctly hoping that Planned Parenthood would be defunded by Donald Trump, it hasn't been touched. Now, that doesn't mean he won't look at it in the future. He's talked about it before, but for right now, Planned Parenthood is going to continue to be funded by the taxpayers of the United States of America. So, not much to look forward to there. Honestly, if Barack Obama were still in power, there's very little that would be different in this budget. We do have an increase in national defense spending. We do have a bump in border security. But really, that's about it. This budget is not much different than the Democrats would have churned out. And so you'll probably see quite a few Democrats complaining about it. But to be honest, budget's not really much different than it would have been if they were in power. Just something to think about. All right, 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to discuss this. I want to talk to you about it, get some of your thoughts about it. If you were a Trump supporter, I want to hear what your comments are on this. If you were someone who was reluctantly for Trump, that's cool. Or if you wound up voting for Hillary, you think that maybe some comments are necessary on this, that you think maybe this budget is a bigger deal than I'm making it out to be. Let me know. 860-1440 are the numbers. We'll be back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
My hopes of a future life are all founded upon the gospel of Christ. John Quincy Adams.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. Call in 860-1440 if you want to opine. Did want to mention this before we get back into our subject matter. Save big on great eats with our latest sweet deal featuring Queen Meats and Wine in Prattville. Grab your $50 value for just $25 this Friday beginning at 8 a.m. on newsradio1440.com. Log on early because this deal is great and going to sell out fast, so be aware of that. Did want to mention this, too, and this is nothing that has to do with the station. This is just on a personal note. There was a family here in Montgomery that had their house burned down just recently, the Scott family. I put all the details up on the Facebook page at the Patriot Preacher, so check out the details on that. They have clothes sizes and things of that nature to help you donate. They're collecting clothes and money or gift card for clothes at several local businesses, two of which happen to be the Yellowhammer Cafe and any of the others. You can check it out there. Like I said, all the information is going to be there on Facebook, so look at that if you're interested in donating and helping out this family. So if you are interested in that, you have some clothes lying around, I'm going to try to find some in my own because I think the dad has the same pant size as me. So that was just fortunate on my part. But they really do need some clothes. This family needs some help. They lost everything in the fire. So please go to Yellowhammer Cafe and donate all this week.
Do they need like small children's clothes?
Yes, they do.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
So if you've got kids and you have some spare clothes that they can't wear anymore, now might be a really good time to put that to use. And it's great to donate to things like Goodwill and whatnot, but, you know, they wind up selling them, and they provide a good service. I'm not dissing them, but, you know, this can go directly to a needy family, and if that is the case. And also I would request that you pray for the Scott family with everything that's going on. So just pray that everything will work out okay for them and that they'll be all right. And go by and donate if you can. All right. We do have someone on the phones now. Let's go to, is that Brian on line one? All right, let's go to Brian on line one. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, sir. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty well. What's on your mind?
I guess I'm going to reiterate what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
What did we get by giving Donald Trump the presidency, giving the Republican Party the House and the Senate? One of the things they railed against forever, and rightly so, and you pointed this out, no budget. Basically, just spending bills. The president, basically, the checks and balance system that was set up. If the Congress is going to control the purse strings,
right?
Haven't we just given the president the all the spending power?
Yeah, well, exactly. That's the reason that the Constitution specifically points out that all budgets, everything that has anything to do with spending, must start in the House. There's no other place that can originate it.
Okay, but we're not. It doesn't seem to me that we're doing that anymore. Now, I hope maybe next year, with a full year in power, maybe that will happen. But
maybe so.
Do you have any realistic hope in anywhere in the near future that we're going to start doing the budget process again?
Well, you know, it's been 9 years since we did that. So it started under Bush. It continued under Obama for the entirety of his presidency. He's, to my knowledge, the only president that went through his entire two terms without a single budget ever coming to his desk. And so,
we know what Barack Obama did.
Right.
The entire idea of us putting Donald Trump in and the Republicans in,
right,
was for us to not do that anymore.
Exactly.
See the Republicans going back to a budget ever.
I honestly don't. I mean, I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that it's just me being pessimistic and that they're going to wind up fixing. But, I mean, goodness, we're in May. We're almost halfway done with the year. They've had a long time to do this. And they actually have proposed budgets before, but they only proposed budgets that they knew the president would veto. And so they were able to pass them without much. Now that they have to consider, there's a president in office, and we can't really blame the Democrats for obstructing us anymore. They're not so gung-ho about making a budget, and you have to ask yourself why. I think it's because they want the ability to adjust their spending much more quickly than they would with an annual budget.
And without any recourse or repercussions.
Exactly.
And I think that's the dangerous part, because we just broached this. The entire idea of separation of powers or a checks and balance system,
mm-hmm,
well, we've just cut that pretty significantly. Barack Obama famously once said, they vote the money, I spend the money. Well, that really wasn't what it was meant to be, but it looks like that's where we're going to be from now on.
Well, unfortunately, I think you're right, Brian, and I appreciate your comments, appreciate your call. No, Brian brings up a good point, and the thing about what we're talking about here with the budget, the separation of powers. Understanding the separation of powers is incredibly important, and here's why. If you're reading the Federalist Papers, Madison and Hamilton both commented on this. One of the things that the states were rightly concerned about with the federal government, because keep in mind, we had just left the monarchy, and what the king said happened. If he wanted to spend money on something, it happened. If he wanted to engage in a military campaign, it happened. The king had absolute power. There was a parliament and there was a legal process going on in England, but by and large, what the king said, that's what the country did. They were just coming out of that in the new republic. And so when they came out of that system, and you can look at almost everything in the Constitution and draw a direct parallel back to what was happening and the tyranny that they were suffering under England to explain why it was done this way, that's why. The reason that everything budget-wise had to start in the House of Representatives, not with the executive, not even with the Senate, is because they wanted Congress to have the power of the purse strings. That if the president supported a policy that wasn't a good idea and was trying to act as though he was running the entire country, the Congress could say, no, we're not spending money on that. So you can advocate for it if you want to, but you're going to have to fund it yourself, essentially, if that's the way you want to do things. And so that's the reason that the federal budget was specifically given to the House. Then it has to go through the House, into the Senate, then to the president's desk. This process was meant to be intentionally difficult to get all the way through. That was done by design. But at the same time, the reason that that was done is because there was an expectation, an obligation that Congress had that if they wanted to do anything, they would have to pass an actual annual budget, which is the reason that, according to the Constitution before it was amended, they met in December because they had to set the budget for the year. Now they meet practically all year. But the point is, the budget is one of the basic functions of the House of Representatives, and we haven't done it for 9 years. And I was hoping that Donald Trump, especially being a businessman, would at least be good on financial matters when he got into the White House. Honestly, there's barely any noticeable difference in this spending bill and the way we're doing things now than we were under 8 years under Obama. Hopefully that changes. Maybe soon. Take it away, Rush.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Just a small town girl living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going in.
Wondering where our regular introduction went.
Just a city boy.
I don't know, you made it disappear. You're a magician too.
Well, if anyone's wondering, the reason that we're playing this as our intro is that Journey has just been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm looking at Rolling Stone right now. So their induction ceremony was over the weekend. Big news.
Good for them. I did not know that. I had heard some discussion.
One of the greatest guitar solos of all time. All right. That's enough. But, I do love Journey. One of my favorite bands of all time. About freaking time they got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There's been this kind of unfair bias against arena rock bands when it came to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but Journey should have been in years ago, in my opinion.
They're letting a lot of sort of strange type groups and people in that you don't really think of.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
And stuff.
Well, I don't know of any rap groups. I mean, there may be one. I don't know.
Hip-hop something. I mean, I've heard people complaining, so...
Yeah, well, I mean, I've... Like, it bothers me that Green Day got in before Journey. I mean, seriously, Green Day's an okay band, but it's Green Day. They're not Journey.
Oh, I didn't know they... Yeah, I agree.
Mm. Yeah, there's no way that they should have gotten in beforehand, but I'm not going to complain about it. They're finally in, so I'm just going to take a victory lap here. But, you know,
Pete Rose should be there. Oh, that's the wrong
Hall. Yeah, I don't think Pete Rose can be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I don't think he's going to get in any Hall of Fame.
No, unless he buys a ticket.
Yeah.
That's about it. All right, but you know, just to give you an update on that, because you guys know I used to be a rock DJ, so really does mean a lot to me that they got in and finally getting the recognition that I think they've deserved for a really long time. So good to hear that. I was looking at something this weekend, because for those of you who are unaware, we did have an interesting development take place in New Orleans this past week, because if you haven't been following this story, there are four Confederate memorials in New Orleans, different statues, obelisk, likenesses of Confederate heroes that have been either removed completely because they started the deconstruction last week or slated to move in the near future. They started moving them last week. Now, before I get into any of this, I do want to sort of offer this disclaimer to offer a little perspective. The city of New Orleans can do whatever they want. It's up to their mayor, their city council, their citizens. So when I comment on this, I'm not commenting as to whether they can or cannot remove the statues. I'm commenting on the wisdom of removing the statues. And so take that into consideration with everything that I'm about to say. I'm not saying that they should be allowed or disallowed to remove them. I'm talking about whether or not they should remove them or not. I was watching an interview with the mayor, Mitch Landrieu, I believe is the way to pronounce it. I assume that that's a French name, especially considering he's the mayor of New Orleans.
That's correct.
But Landrieu, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, it may be Landrieu. I mean, I'm serious. I'm not sure it's one or the other. Landrieu sounds more like it.
Yeah, that sounds right. But anyway, he was on an interview with Rachel Maddow the other night where he was talking about them being, the statues themselves, being memorials to the defenders of slavery. Well, here's the problem with that, and we'll get into the specifics in a minute. But not every memorial that is being removed deals with a defender of slavery. There are a couple that did and a couple that did not. And that's where I think we do a lot of disservice to understanding of the history of the time of the mid-1800s where the Civil War was taking place. Because it's easier and intellectually not as challenging for us to do, I believe that what we do is we tend to paint with a very broad brush. Everybody on the North was good. Everybody on the North was anti-slavery. And so they're the good guys. Everybody in the South was bad. They were all pro-slavery. They're all the bad guys. So if they were affiliated with the Confederacy, they're bad. If they were affiliated with the North, the United States at the time, they're good. First of all, that's oversimplifying things. And secondly, it's merely not the case. There were, just like in a lot of things, good people and bad people on both sides. There were people that fought for the Union that were ardently pro-slavery, but, you know, that they were American citizens and they saw this as a injustice that had happened by states seceding from the Union. You have the same thing on the Confederacy. There were men that were fighting for the Confederacy that, whether you believe it or not, they believed it, that this was a states' rights issue, and that slavery was not what they were fighting for. There were many abolitionists that fought for the Confederacy. And so when we're talking about these different historical figures, it's important to understand them as individuals, not merely a collective. Now, the mayor said also in this interview that a lot of the things associated with the Confederacy are out of step with modern viewpoints. Yes, they are. That's the point. Because if you only have memorials to people that agree with your modern sensibilities, then we have to take away the Washington Monument, the Jefferson Memorial, the Lincoln Memorial. We have to remove all those, too, because they wouldn't have agreed with absolutely everything that we said. History is going to conflict with our modern sensibilities at times. I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong or commenting on whether their ideas are right or wrong, but at the same time, that's part of what history does. It allows us to contrast ourselves to the past. And when you start removing that, you remove that measuring stick, as it were, for yourself, you have less to compare yourself to. And with doing that, I believe that removing all the monuments, keep in mind I said removing all the monuments, would be a mistake. And kind of going along with this, he said in that same interview that the diversity of New Orleans is their strong suit and that these statues hinder that. Well, the irony is, if you're going to talk about diversity, the greatest diversity is intellectual diversity. I mean, it's great to have a diversity of races and cultures. Yes, that's good. And that is sort of a hallmark of New Orleans because it's a town near a port. They were a center of trade, which meant that people came in and went, and that naturally had a great exchange of cultures. So, yes, that is the case. But at the same time, it's ironic that he's bashing the people that disagree with him while saying, but diversity is our strong suit. Now, it's okay to disagree with someone, even if their opinion is diverse from yours. But he's saying that the statues represent a clash with the values of the city of New Orleans and their diversity, when in fact he's saying, but we don't want people to disagree. Well, if that's, if you're going to be a proponent of diversity, you need to also be a proponent of intellectual diversity, people who disagree with your viewpoint. Now, so far what has happened, and this is the reason that this story got brought up, is in this past week where the statues have been dismantled, there have been protests and vigils being held by a group called the Sons of Confederate Veterans. But thus far, they have been peaceful. They've been just standing there with candles and, in many cases, either Confederate or rebel flags. And so far, everything's been peaceful. Now, there was one guy who was in charge of the deconstruction who his Lamborghini got torched. There's a good chance that was related to the memorials being taken down. Now, we have absolutely no evidence that it was connected to this particular group, but it may be connected to that event. But if that is the case, that person needs to be brought to justice no matter how he feels about this. But the protests have been peaceful so far.
What about, you said dismantled, and I thought, with a sledgehammer, destroying. What are they, so, and I know that's not what happened, but do you know what they plan to do? Or maybe they are trying to destroy them, but couldn't they put them on some private property or somebody just purchase them from the city of New Orleans? Or
I suppose that's a possibility, but that's not what they did.
What did they do with them?
Well, the picture of the ones being dismantled that I saw was, the first one that they got rid of was this obelisk that honored the Crescent City White League. And they were taking it apart. Now, I don't know if they can put it back together. It looked to me like they had broken pieces of it off and then lifted it off.
Well, see, I don't. I may differ from you a little bit as far as the appropriateness of it in a public place or in a city or an environment that really is government-run, government-sanctioned. But I don't think they should be destroyed.
Well,
that's destroying history.
Yeah, they've only removed one so far, and that's what they've done with the one that they did is, they didn't, bust it up into tiny little pieces, but they did take some kind of device. I'm not a construction worker. I don't know exactly what all this was. And it looks like they had broken, because it wasn't a clean cut, so it looks like they had broken a piece of this monolith off and lifted a piece off of it. So far as I can tell, it actually was demolished.
That's sad.
Yeah, but before we get to a break, I did want to mention our good friends at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. Been in business here in Montgomery for 50 years, have a great reputation with the people around here, and for a very good reason. What they do works. They know what they're doing. If you need tires, they can get you new tires, get them aligned, get them put on properly. If you need an oil change, they can handle all that. But they can also handle things that are much more difficult. I mean, with me, they've handled something as small as replacing the light bulb in my headlights to something as major as completely replacing my power steering pump. So there's a huge range of things that they can take care of, all makes and models, and if they do happen to run into something that they can't personally do, they can recommend you to somebody who can. So that's Jim Woodham, Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center on the Troy Highway. Incredibly trustworthy, incredibly competent, and they always have given me an excellent price, even before they knew I was the Patriot Preacher. I've been going to them since before they were a sponsor. So it's not just that they're giving me celebrity treatment. They really do care about all their customers and give everybody a fair price when it comes to that. So check them out on the Troy Highway today. And real quick, the phone lines are open. 860-1440 is the number, and we have a two-pack of biscuits tickets to give away for May 12th against the Chattanooga Lookouts. So if you call in, you may be a winner. We'll be back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
It is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore His protection and favor. George Washington.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. Call in 860-1440 if you want to weigh in on this issue, and if you do, you can also be a winner. Listen to News Radio 1440 and the Patriot Preacher all week in the 10 o'clock hour for your chance to win a pair of passes. I tell you what, we're just going to open that up to both hours because sometimes they limit me on that stuff, but, you know, it's my show. I can get away with stuff like that. So.
Yes, you can.
They wrote that into my copy, but I'm just going to go ahead and run with either hour. If you call in all this week, we're giving away two packs to the Biscuits versus the Chattanooga Lookouts on May 12th. Really looking forward to that. The Biscuits have done very well this year. They're not in first place, but they're contenders for it. I think we've got a much better team, honestly, than I was expecting. So if you're interested at all at getting a two-pack of the Biscuits this week, call in 860-1440. Call in to me. Joe will get your name and your number. Just say that I'm interested in the Biscuits tickets, and then we'll have you on the air, and you could be a winner. We'll draw at the end of the show. So, all right. That being said, I did want to get back into what we were talking about with everything that was going on in New Orleans with the removing of Confederate memorials. Now, I've talked to you about sort of the politics surrounding it. I want to talk to you for a moment about the history of the memorials themselves. The first one that has been dismantled, and I believe that this one has actually been completely removed at this point because they started it last week. It looks like the construction, if not complete, is very near complete at this point. It's a monolith that honored the Crescent City White League. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with the history, what that particular group did is when the Confederacy fell, there was a lot of contention in a lot of southern cities, including New Orleans, about the changeover, the fact that slavery had been removed, that it was no longer able to be a part of any state that belonged to the United States of America because of the 13th Amendment. And you had people going in and essentially trying to stage uprisings to secede again. And granted, I'm not an expert on the history of New Orleans, but from the history that I've seen and read about doing research for this show on the Crescent City White League, is it seems as though they were a group of rabble-rousers that would attack police, attack militia that was stationed there, would attack people from the North, carpetbaggers as they called them, who had come there to oversee some of the things that were being done down there. So honestly, if we're looking at the four, this is probably the most controversial one, and I understand the reason that some people are a little leery about their city government honoring a group of people that were essentially outlaws that wanted things to go back to the way they were. That one, granted, I'm not always sure about removing history. I'm always suspicious of that. I like history being preserved as much as possible because here's the thing. When you come across that monolith and you don't know what it's about, you can explain that to somebody and it starts a conversation. So I'm actually in favor of the monolith remaining there, if nothing else, for that purpose. But at the same time, if we're talking about honoring the people that that monolith represents, I understand why people are apprehensive about that. That makes sense to me. So that one I'm more okay with. The next one is a statue of New Orleans native Pierre Gustave Tourant Beauregard, who, for those of you unfamiliar with his story, again, New Orleans native, he's the person who ordered the first shots on Fort Sumter, and he was instrumental in the Battle of Bull Run. So, big Confederate hero, big, you know, important general in the Confederate War. He was an engineer in the Mexican-American War, so he served with the United States Army before he was ever with the Confederate armies. And he held the Union forces at bay in Petersburg for about 10 months, which prevented the capture of Richmond. So he was instrumental in the war. You have to remember in the late year, the last year of the Civil War especially, basically the South was already beaten, and they were just trying to converge on Lee's forces and converge on Richmond and take it. So there were several times where they would be attacked at multiple points. And there were a handful of forces that would specifically hold off this force or that force to keep them from converging on Richmond or converging on Lee's forces. This guy was one of those generals that was in command who held off what turned into a 10-month siege by the Union and held them off at Richmond. So this guy, I couldn't really find anything on his personal politics or how he felt about slavery or anything like that, but there's really not any indication for or against whether he was pro-slavery, against slavery, that I could find, at least. Now, maybe there's someone who knows a little bit more about this history that could call in and help me out with that. But I couldn't find anything on his stances on that specifically. But this guy was a war hero. And I don't have a problem, especially because he's a New Orleans native, with them bringing that up and trying to honor and memorialize him with that. So, just something to think about. We'll get into some of the other points of this, because I am running out of time. We'll get into some of the history of this on the other side of this break, and we'll finish this up. We'll be back. People stop and everybody stares. She don't know what they're staring for. She don't know she's beautiful. Never cross the line. She don't know she's beautiful. No, she's not that kind. She don't know she's beautiful. Though time.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
We talk more about the history behind the Confederate monuments being removed in New Orleans. More on that now on The Patriot Preacher. Hey, it's Caleb Colquitt, Patriot Preacher, News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to call in, give me your opinion on some of this, which I'm looking forward to, because here's the reason I think that this is important, and it could affect us. It hasn't yet, but keep in mind that Alabama is a state that has a lot of Confederate history in it. And Montgomery specifically has a lot of Confederate history in it. We were the first capital of the Confederacy. And so because of that, we have a lot of memorials. We have, of course, the first Confederate White House. There's a lot of history revolving around the Confederacy right here in the city of Montgomery. And so I want you to consider that some of these things could theoretically happen right here in our own backyard if this issue were to be brought up. And at the same time, I think it's really important to ask ourselves the question, how do we handle this? Do we say, no, don't remove any of it because it's all history? Do we say, yes, remove all of it because it's history that we're not proud of? Or do we maybe say, well, maybe some of it, maybe not, because we want to take it on a case-by-case basis? These are important questions that we need to ask ourselves, because this is something that affects us. We are, like I said, the first capital of the Confederacy. There's a lot of history here. And so we have to ask ourselves those important questions as to how much history do we want to maintain and to what degree? And should it be on public land? Should it be held specifically to private lands? Should we be allowed to have certain things out in public? Should we keep them, relegate them to only having them in a museum? There are certain questions that we need to ask about this that I think are important to us. Now, specifically with what was going on in New Orleans and then removing monuments related to the Confederacy that are there in that city, One of the statues they are removing is a statue of Jefferson Davis, who, of course, was the president of the Confederacy back when that was going on. Now, Davis, there are a lot of Confederate icons that you could have a debate back and forth with whether or not they were really pro-slavery, whether they had issues with black people, or that they just saw them as people stuck in a bad situation. Jefferson Davis is not one of those people. Jefferson Davis, based on the things that I've read about him, was a white supremacist in the truest sense of the word. And maybe that's part of the reason that he got elected. I don't know. But either way, you can't really make the case that Jefferson Davis was just one of those super complicated people that had a diverse views on the subject. Jefferson Davis was very clear about his beliefs. And frankly, a lot of the ire that he draws from the left, he absolutely deserves. So when we're talking about Jefferson Davis, especially since I don't know that the man ever set foot in New Orleans, I'd have to look at the history on that as well. But he's very different than the statue they're taking down of General Beauregard, who was born in New Orleans. There is a history there. He was a war hero. Whether you agreed with the war that he was fighting or not, he was valiant. He protected his men. He was doing his job as a soldier. Jefferson Davis threw himself into that position and did so on the basis of, I'm going to protect slavery. So you really can't make the case that Jefferson Davis had this complicated relationship with slavery that you can make for a lot of the Confederate icons. So I kind of understand, again, if you were going to remove some of the memorials, maybe not necessarily all of them the way they're doing them right now, I can understand the first one, which was honoring the Crescent City White League, who fought police officers and militia. And to be honest, I understand getting rid of the Jefferson Davis statue. Now, again, the question comes back to the same point that I brought up with the monolith, that because it's history, do we preserve it even if it's not comfortable or not something that we're proud of? Because people of the past were, and we need to have a conversation about that and why that happened. That's a legitimate question. I'll get to that in just a second. The fourth statue that they are getting rid of is a statue of General Robert E. Lee. Now, Robert E. Lee is very different from Jefferson Davis and what I just said about him, because General Lee was an abolitionist. He believed that slavery was wrong. In fact, he said in a letter to his wife, slavery as an institution is a moral and political evil in any country. He believed that it was not only wrong for people to own other people, but that no matter the situation, in any country, it's always wrong regardless of the circumstances surrounding it. And so General Lee is a little different in that sense. He's not somebody that was a white supremacist. And actually, a lot of people don't know this about General Lee, he was against secession, fought against secession. Now, when Virginia finally did secede, his reasoning for joining the Confederate Army was, I can't fight my own family and my own brothers and sisters and my own neighbors. I'm a citizen of the state of Virginia. And I know that this is something we don't relate to as much in 2017 as Americans, but back then, your state citizenship to a lot of people was seen as more significant than your citizenship to the country. You were in a lot of ways, a Virginian first, an American second. And that's the way Robert E. Lee viewed it, that once Virginia had gone one way, he was not going to fight Virginia. And that's the reason that he made the decision that he did. So General Lee is actually a more interesting, a deeper character in this particular part of history, because he did believe in the abolition of slavery. Now, a lot of people would be offended by this, but he was more of a gradual abolitionist, which means he believed it was evil. He believed it needed to be gotten rid of, but he believed that it needed to be done slowly, that because of the economy, because of the other political factors surrounding it, that it did need to be gotten rid of, but it needed to happen not necessarily overnight. And it did cause some of the problems that General Lee himself did predict. But at the same time, he was not a racist. He was not a slavery defender, as the mayor called him. And so it's important to take these things on a case-by-case basis. And frankly, them removing the statues of General Beauregard and General Lee, if the issue is slavery, that doesn't make any sense. If the issue is racism, that doesn't make any sense. So their motivation is bad, and I feel that they're making the mistake of whitewashing the, no pun intended, whitewashing history and taking away the Confederate, anyone even associated with the Confederacy, even though they're not looking at them as individuals, they're looking at them as a collective, and they're all one way and painting with a broad brush. Which is, we wouldn't want people to do that to us today, and we wouldn't want people in the future to do it to us after we're gone. It's unfair to them, and I think it's unfair to the students of history. Because this is why I don't like removing parts of history like this. Removing history closes the door to a conversation. Even the memorials that I said that I don't necessarily like that are still there, like the Jefferson Davis statue. If I'm having a conversation with someone, they walk by, they see the Jefferson Davis statue, say, why are they honoring that guy? Well, that opens the conversation to history and explain that mistakes were made in the past, that America has some problems. And it's much harder to keep from repeating the mistakes of the past if we're not allowed to talk about them. It's harder to keep from repeating our own mistakes if all of these things are regulated to just being in a textbook and something we read about there. These memorials and seeing how ingrained it was in our culture and our history, I think that's an important part of the conversation. Just something to think about. All right, we'll be back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Galatians 5:1. It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and do not be subject again to a yoke of slavery.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers, as always. If you call in, keep in mind we do have that two-pack of Biscuits tickets for the Biscuits versus Chattanooga on May the 12th. So if you are interested, you can call in, put your name in the hat, and we'll draw at the end of the show. Speaking of, real quickly, I did want to mention this. There is a programming update. We're not sure if we're going to be able to carry the Biscuits today. We had a little mishap with the technology. I posted about it last night on the Facebook page to alert everybody, but we had some technology issues. We're not 100% sure if we're going to be able to get the Biscuits on the air because they play in what, Joe, like 20 minutes or so?
Yeah, the actual tip-off. The first pitch is 10:35. It's education day game. And I know you can, it's mentioned on the broadcast, I don't guess it'd be inappropriate to mention that the games are on MILB.com, televised, usually with our audio, but I guess somebody, if they want to really keep up with it and they can't make it to the game, or they could do that if they got an app or a computer.
Right.
But, it's what time? About 13 minutes. I hope that's not unlucky, but
well, we will look into that and we'll try to get them on the air if at all possible. But if not, we'll carry on and do the show as normal. I'm going to, for the time being, because if this is the last one, I would be doing my Star Spangled Sermon. Right now, we're working under the assumption that we're going to have a full show and go straight into Rush, because it doesn't look like we're going to be able to do it. But if we do have an update, we will let you know immediately.
We were talking about Jeff Davis off the air a minute ago during the break. And I really agree with everything you said, because I've read a couple of biographies on the man. But it's still behind the scenes. He was still, what we didn't mention, he actually served in the Union Army during the Mexican War, and he was a Secretary of State for the United States.
Right. He didn't just come out of nowhere. So.
No. And why he was... And of course, he wasn't ever really elected as far as we think of an election. It was Congress that gathered in Montgomery. That's where they wrote the Constitution, and they voted him as president.
Right.
And his little racial friend, Alexander Stevens, as the vice president.
Right. So there's a good bit of history there. I'm actually changing tracks here. But going into another story that I saw, and this was interesting to me. And Joe, if you could pull up in my news clips over there, pull up Rice Priebus.
Okay.
We'll try to get that. There was an issue that was going on there. Rice Priebus, just to kind of set this up, there was a clip by him where he was talking about the libel laws. Now, you may remember, because there is a history about this, that when going back to Donald Trump during the campaign, he was talking about libel laws, about being able to sue people, sue journalists that were essentially writing stories that were less than flattering about him. And so there were a number of factors going into that. But by and large, the big thing was that Trump had talked about revisiting libel laws and revisiting the First Amendment to see if we could make it easier to sue people. And because of that, there was a journalist on Rice Priebus, his chief of staff, that was talking about this particular quote yesterday because it had been brought up again in a tweet by Donald Trump. And so he asked Priebus to address that. So here's an interview with Priebus and the journalist asking him about that. Clip one, let's play that.
First of all, there was what he said about opening up the libel laws, tweeting, "The failing New York Times has disgraced the media world, gotten me wrong for two solid years, change the libel laws." That would require, as I understand it, a constitutional amendment. Is he really going to pursue that? Is that something he wants to pursue?
I think it's something that we've looked at, and how that gets executed or whether that goes anywhere is a different story. But when you have articles out there that have no basis or fact, and we're sitting here on 24/7 cable companies writing stories about constant contacts with Russia and all these other matters.
So you think the president should be able to sue the New York Times for stories he doesn't like?
I think that newspapers and news agencies need to be more responsible with how they report the news. I am so tired.
I don't think anybody would disagree with that. Everyone, it's about whether or not the president should have a right to sue
them. And I already answered
the
question. I said this is something that is being looked at, but it's something that, as far as how it gets executed, where we go with it, that's another issue. But I think this is a frustration of unnamed sources, of things that the FBI has told me personally is complete BS, written in a newspaper article in my office one-on-one. This here is not true. And guess what? But it's sitting there on the front page. So how is it possible? And what do we have? 24/7 cable about a story about intelligence that the actual intelligence agency says is not true.
All right, so listening to what Rice Priebus said there and observing that combined with the president's quotes, this is Donald Trump's chief of staff, so not some peon in the White House. I mean, he runs essentially everything else and the cabinet and helps with that. I mean, maybe other than the vice president, the chief of staff is kind of the top guy. So he's saying that we need to open up libel laws, which there's a problem there because, first of all, the president can't actually open up libel laws. That would require, as the reporter brings up, an actual constitutional amendment to change. And I don't want to overplay this because, frankly, I believe that I don't think it's going to be able to go anywhere because I don't think Donald Trump's going to get anywhere near the votes that he would need to actually get to a constitutional amendment. So I don't want to overplay this or make it into something bigger because I don't think it's something he can actually do. But it does confirm something that I've been worried about with the Trump team and what they've been looking to do for a long time now. This was the biggest concern I had about Trump because of the way that he, frankly, doesn't have a lot of knowledge on nor respect for the Constitution. And even people that were big supporters of his, like one of my favorite talk show hosts, Andrew Wilkow, on a different channel, he even said that as much as he liked Trump, at the same time, he could stand to read the Constitution a few more times and actually understand some of the things that it's saying. So at the same time, and with free speech specifically, he seems to like the idea of bullying, intimidating, trying to keep reporters from saying things negative about him. We've seen this as a pattern that has been evolving out of his administration for some time now, taking well-known accredited news sources and going ahead and taking their press credentials, ignoring their request, keeping them out of that press gaggle a couple weeks ago. So there's a lot of things that, unfortunately, the president seems to have issues when it comes to this. Now, he brings up that it's 24-hour cable news or big-time papers that we know that are reporting things that are not true. Here's the thing. Doesn't matter if it's not true. Doesn't matter if the FBI, because this was one of his big points, he says, I've had the FBI sitting in there and telling me that this is not true. Well, doesn't matter if the FBI says it's not true. Because, A, the FBI is also a part of the federal government and open to scrutiny by the press just like anybody else. That does not give you grounds to sue them on it. Now, if there's an actual case of defamation and libel, that's fine. But you use the existing laws. You don't open up laws and try to change it just because they're writing stories that you don't personally like. If this had been just a normal, run-of-the-mill Trump administration slam on media bias, okay. In fact, I'm even on board with that because, yes, the bias fawns over liberals like Elizabeth Warren and Hillary Clinton and especially Barack Obama. And then when it comes to Donald Trump, they look for absolutely every possible thing that they can report on him to make him look bad. Yes, there's a media bias there. No one denies that, that has any measure of objectivity. But at the same time, you're looking at this, that's not what this is. That's not just saying, hey, the media is biased and we don't like it. That's saying we're going to try to take legal action against journalists because they're saying things that we don't like. That is a different matter entirely. And what that does is it is an assault on free speech. And that's the problem that I have. The First Amendment is now on assault. It is being attacked by both the right and the left. By the left, we're having attacks with in the forms of protest. We had Barack Obama spying on journalists. I mean, there's countless examples of them as well, but we've also got people on the right essentially doing the same thing. And here's the problem that I have with all of that. When we're talking about these two conflicting sources, as it were, if we're being targeted and the First Amendment is being targeted by both sides, then I'm afraid that it won't be able to sustain because I think people are angry, people are upset, they just want to feel like they're winning, and they're so concerned with winning, they don't care how they win. Right or left, they don't care how they win. And that's problematic because they're willing to throw their principles aside, willing to throw the Constitution aside in order to feel like they're quote-unquote winning and beating the other side. They're so busy trying to shut the other side up, they're not asking the question of whether they should or not. And you can never learn something in an argument. You can never do any self-reflection or learn something from the other side or have the person on the other side learn something from you. If you're really not concerned with winning the argument, you're concerned with shutting the other side up. This is using intimidation and power to scare people. And when that is the case, you won't change them because you can't control other people, but you can control yourself. You can control what you do. That's what I'm asking us to do now. All right. It looks like the biscuits may go on air here in just a second, so we're going to look into that now. Hopefully we can get them on the air. If this is the last segment I do, stay the course, friends.
I'd be safe and warm if I was in L.A.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The doctrines of Jesus are simple and tend all to the happiness of man. Thomas Jefferson.
Hey, we're back. You're listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Didn't know that I was going to be back, but it looks like the biscuits are currently in a rain delay. They will be starting the broadcast ideally at 10:43, so we'll see where that goes. I was telling Michael Killer Kelly, who's the producer for the biscuits today, in there, I said it's it feels weird that I'm doing the radio show and I don't know when it's going to end. It's like being the pilot of the plane and you have no idea where you're supposed to land. You're just kind of looking around.
Oh, that's a great
You're looking around for space.
Yeah, and me here at these other controls. It's,
right. It's
yeah, good analogy.
We're trying to work through it.
Let's put it this way, though. We're not at 30,000 feet, and we're not going to hit the ground any time.
Right. No one dies if we screw this up. That's true.
That is correct.
But anyway, we'll go ahead and jump into the Star-Spangled Sermon. Just in case this is the last segment, and it probably will be. Over the weekend, I found this great movie on Netflix that I've watched at least 100, 200 times as a kid. It was Walt Disney's Homeward Bound. You remember the story. For those of you unfamiliar with it, the only thing you really need to understand this lesson is that there's three main characters, two dogs and a cat, a dog named Shadow who's kind of the older, wiser dog. You've got a younger dog who's kind of impatient and impulsive named Chance, who lived on the street a lot of his life, doesn't really care about anything, never had a family before. And then you've got a cat named Sassy who they get lost in the wilderness. They're trying to find their way home back to their family. And there's this really great scene that's a huge turning point in the plot of the movie where Shadow tries to rescue the cat, Sassy, who's fallen into the river and she gets swallowed up by a waterfall and they've lost her. They believe that she's dead at this point. And so there's this real somber moment where Shadow is looking out over the river, sort of mourning. And he and Chance are having this conversation because the dogs do talk in this movie. He said, "I had a responsibility to her, to love her and protect her." And he talks about how Chance has that same responsibility to Jamie, who's his owner. And this is a big turning point for Chance, who's kind of this young, impulsive character beforehand, who all of a sudden says, "I hope one day I could be like Shadow." I really appreciated this as an adult that I didn't really appreciate it as much as a child when I watched this movie because I was a big brother myself. And that reminded me of Colossians 1:18, where it says, talking about Jesus here, "He is also the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, so that he himself will come to have first place in everything." Jesus is God incarnate. He is the Lord. He is the King. But here he's also talked about as being, quote, the firstborn from the dead. Well, what does the firstborn mean? The firstborn means that there are people who follow. That Jesus had the intention of people also coming back from the dead to follow in his footsteps. See, here we're given the idea, and this is also confirmed by the book of Hebrews and James as well, that while God is our Father, in many ways, Jesus is our big brother. Not unlike Shadow in the movie I'm just talking about, he has a responsibility to love us, protect us, and not unlike the role of Chance with us, we kind of look at that, find some purpose and admiration in it, and because of that, desire to be like him. Jesus is our big brother and wants us to follow in his footsteps. In other words, do what he did, die, and then live again. Because that's what Jesus did. He came, he sacrificed his life, he died, and then he rose from the dead. He wants us to do exactly the same thing, in a different way, in a less literal way. But that's supposed to be what we do. And this is talked about at length in Romans 3 and Romans 6. So if you want to do some extra study, check those out. You see, that was one of the significance of baptism. We die in the grave of baptism. We die to our sin. Our old life is crucified with him, which the book of Galatians explains. And then we're resurrected in newness of life. We walk differently. We walk as though we've been reborn. You see, like Chance, we see what we want to be in our big brother. And because of that, we mimic him. Our journey mimics his. We try to be like him. And that's our goal. And it's the highest goal man can have. All right, guys. Talk to you later. Stay the course, friends. These are the days when
you wish your bed was already made. The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.